Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband, and I did send the postcard today to Jim Cross because obviously he has the package. I mean, I have the confirmation from the post office, and I'm wondering now what happens to the package. My assumption is there was probably a dialogue between Jim Cross and my wife. That would be a rational guess, and I did ask him today about if Susanna will get it. So I'm trying to keep the pressure up on that because I'm constantly poking at this because I want to break through. This is my wife and my kids, and my love for them has unabated. And you know, having those now five rows complete, and going to start the sixth row, I assume any day if it's not out in the box right now. Of return postcards, which again is against the law, but you know, man's law. What does it matter when you're what makes you above the law? Interesting. But anyway, so I did send that, and I do wonder what's going to happen. But there's a couple interesting things happening that I wanted. I had a delightful last night. Well, I had two delightful dialogues and heard an interesting story. So just real quick on that. I did when I was 63 or 64, I did the video Obedience to Christ or Social Security. Made the claim that the follower of Christ is to pay into the system but should not take from the system because we're called to pay taxes. But when we take from the system, we're endorsing the system, and the system is wrong. And of course, it's theft, and I went through all of that. When I turned 65 and became qualified to receive it according to the state, I did a follow-up video. And, you know, now that I'm 66, I'm still qualified and I refuse to take it because it's theft. And, you know, there's that little issue about you shall not steal. I know it's Old Testament, so who cares? But there's that aspect of it. And the other thing about it is, you know, it is part of, it is right there in the Communist Manifesto. You know, because it is... And there was a comment made, and I have to research this. I don't remember who made it or the exact quote, but I think it was during the early part of the U.S. where the idea is once people learn how to vote for themselves, avarice, the system will collapse. However it was said, I don't know. In other words, when people learn that I can vote to get a benefit for me. And especially if I don't have to think about, well, the government's so big, I can get my fair share. Once that attitude develops, we no longer think that it's not coming from the government, but the taxpayer, my neighbor. So I'm no longer stealing from my neighbor. I'm just taking from the government. And it isolates that. And what I see around the world in so many countries, they have typically it's called a pension system. You know, we have Social Security, which is basically a pension system. And in the UK, it's collapsing stronger than it is here in the US. But it will collapse here in the US because people voted for themselves avarice. They wanted a benefit. I want for me, and I'll take from the government, because after all, it's billions upon billions of dollars, and I'm only getting a few thousand, and tens of thousands, whatever. But so since my part is so small, it doesn't matter. You know, something about being faithful in little things. Oh, that's again, it's the Bible. We don't want to go there. So you see it collapsing there. It had some issues in the U.S. in the past, and it's having issues in a lot of places, especially in, well, for, you know, war zones, in Ukraine, in there's a whole lot of people who are dependent on pensions, and those things stopped. So they're having difficulties. There are people in a lot of the Middle East, in Lebanon, things of the nature, who are dependent on those things. And now it's gone. And it's a problem. And I do think because of the demographic changes, well, and you know, that's a related thing on that, is apparently the numbers now have come out in the last year or so, something like 1.5% of those who took the COVID vaccine, you know, the immunization in the UK, died. Now, the issue is, I don't know the age demographic of those numbers. Because once you get to, I think it's late 50s, early 60s, depending upon what country and so forth, your odds of surviving the year drops below 99%. So, you know, right now, my statistical odds of surviving till next year are below 99%, comfortably below now, not up 66. Because I think it's late 50s, maybe early 60s, but I think it's late 50s, the demographics in the U.S., you drop below. But then, of course, the question is, how many of those numbers were people within that expected, you know, higher death count? How many is the young? Because obviously, young people are dying like crazy. And of course, the birth rate, you know, the last number I heard is Germany alone. It's over a million fewer births than in the last year or two. I mean, it's just plummeted. Birth rate has plummeted. And a lot of this is due to spontaneous abortion or other things. But anyway, so I wonder, you know, that system is failing. And it will fail here in the U.S. probably, unless the demographics change radically. If the COVID vaccines issues helps speed up the death of older people, people who would be on the system, pension system, the Social Security, that will reduce the load in order to reduce the burden on the system. But if the people who are putting into it die at too high of a rate, that puts a burden, increases the burden on the system. So, you know, these things, I really wonder what's going to happen in the U.S. But anyway, these are things that, and obviously for my kids, there won't be any pension system. I mean, that'll be gone by the time they get to my age. I think that would be an educated guess. You know, it's not a thus says the Lord, but that's definitely an educated guess because of the way the demographics are changing. But last night, crawled in bed, and after a little while after I was in bed, I heard the beep of you know, a text message came in, and I said, "Well, I'm going to just stay in bed." And I got to it this morning, and it was from my friend in Utah, and he set a challenge before me, and I was so overjoyed. You know, because there was, because I commented to him in the response. I set a challenge to him many, many months ago. And he responded saying, "I think I'm going to be late for work." You know, because we have, a 2-3 hour time difference. And he saw the message in the morning. He says, I got to do some study on this. Because there's a joy in engaging seriously. So he set this before me. There's a gentleman. What is it? He apparently wrote a book many years ago. A Journey into the Heart of Three-Face. And this is a guy who wrote a book and did a lot of study by actually going to the places where the events occurred on Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And he is a Jew himself. And he gave a lecture. So I did some quick study on him from what I could find this morning. And then he gave a lecture at UCSB 10, 15 years ago, 2008 or so, or something of that nature. And I said, okay, I got to watch that. Because where he gave it, it was in the humanities area of UCSB, University of California in Santa Barbara. You know, and I grew up a couple miles away from it. And I've probably been in the very room because in my high school, we had a humanities class. And occasionally, we got in a bunch of cars and we went to UCSB because, again, it's just a couple miles. And on some occasions, we went to the humanities area for a lecture. So I really wonder if it was the same room. There were probably other rooms like that, you know. And this is, you know, obviously a number of years between the 1970s and, you know, early 2000s. But anyway, so because of that nearness, I watched it for about an hour this morning, and, you know, it delayed everything. But what I heard is someone who was looking at it from a very humanistic perspective. That Judaism, his basic idea is it was built on the writings of people. Christianity was built on the writings of people, and Islam based on the writings of people, and they all refer back to Abraham. And it's just human perspectives, and he wants to be ecumenical kind of stuff. And you know, there's a whole lot of problems with it. But rather than make this extremely long, I am going to have, it'll probably go on for a while, a delightful dialogue with my friend. Because again, you know, he had the irony in the Pearl of Great Price. There's the Book of Abraham and the Book of Moses. Is that right? Two different texts within the Pearl of Great Price, and they talk about it was the creation event. One was referring to God using singular terms, one plural terms, but basically identical in context. And I said, wait a minute, there's a conflict here. And so far, all I got back from, oh, you noticed that. So, because I will contend, and obviously he understands this, I will contend that Joseph Smith is fraud. But as is Abraham, Muhammad. But that doesn't mean I disrespect the people who follow Joseph Smith or Muhammad. I would suggest what they're doing is following a fallacy. And rationally, I need to be able to accept from, well, for example, a Jewish gentleman, that those who subscribe to the authors of the New Testament would be following a fraud. And it's, which would be a rational thing for somebody to state. They would say the Tanakh, the Old Testament, that's it. The New Testament is man-made. That would be a rational argument from someone who looks from the Jewish perspective. And I think that would be an appropriate thing for them to say. And I would contend they're wrong. But again, I'm not going to hate them. You know, because again, I'm a follower of Christ. I'm called to love my enemies, and I don't look at them as an enemy because we have a different foundation. But there's so much on this. But I'll just do one point because I found it fascinating. There were several that were fascinating, but after he gave a lecture, which it was interesting, he's a good speaker, and there were a whole number of things where I say, well, you're missing the point. But anyway, there was a Q&A afterwards. The last question was, can you comment on when Jesus states, before Abraham was, I am. It's John 8:58. Because, you know, the important thing about that is then, so they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. It was the Jews that did this. And, you know, a lot of people will take this as, oh, hate the Jews. No. That's not the purpose of this. You don't hate Jews because they're Jewish. Remember, Jesus is a Jew. So is Paul, so are the apostles and whatnot. It's those who, what is the context here? The Jews answered him, are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? Jesus answered, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. So there was a lot of provocative statements for the crowd at that point, just there. And of course, and the one who seeks it, he's talking about God the Father, because he is the judge. The Jews said to him, now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets. And yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will not taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died and the prophets died? Who do you make yourself out to be? Which, in context would be a rational question. Jesus answered, if I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is the Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. And if I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. And, just stopping right at that point, because you've got to remember, especially at the point when, there was the issue of Abraham and his and Lot. So three showed up to visit Abraham, and then they went away, and there was the dialogue between Abraham and the one particular person within that group. That was Jesus Christ. The context is clear. And it seems if you read the text, especially with that in mind, you can see Abraham knew. Abraham recognized, that man is my creator. But your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. So the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham? And of course, that was the point I would suggest. Not only, that Abraham, while Abraham was walking the earth early, in his life, yes, he saw Jesus Christ. And Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him. Because obviously, because what he's saying, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. This is the passage of Exodus when Moses approached God, Jesus, in the burning bush. And who should I say? I am this. It's ego, I me in the Greek. It is basically I exist, or the self-existing one. So Jesus is making a statement right there, unambiguous. Jesus is claiming to be God, and of course that's why they picked up the stones, because if I make that claim, it's inappropriate, because I'm not God. I'm his creation. I'm not God. But Jesus can make that claim. And therefore, that is the significance of that. Go back to the context of this a journey to the heart of three-face. For the Jew, the idea that the Jew was rejecting Christ is a common statement, but not reality. Because throughout the Old Testament, the time of the Tanakh, there was a lot of people who accepted Christ. But, you know, the Messiah, the Anointed One, had the direct interaction as Adam, Abraham, and so forth did. Saw the blessings and so forth, but didn't use his name as Jesus, Yeshua, or Christ, or Messiah. So we don't have that text. And some people will say, okay, if I'm a Jew, I don't see Jesus in the Old Testament. But he's there. Absolutely, he's there. What the New Testament does is it makes it clear who he is. So it's not that, you know, the idea that somehow the New Testament replaces the Old Testament is not an idea that's consistent with the Bible. The New Testament completes, it does not correct or change, put it that way. It is a completion. You know, Jesus, he did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. And so the New Testament is not changing the old. It is just the continuation of the story. However, the idea that Abraham was a founding member, that it's based on him, the Jewish faith, or even Abraham is our father, those kind of things that are even stated. It's not based on Abraham, it's based on Christ. It's based on the Lord. It always has been. Abraham, came Isaac, then Jacob, who was renamed Israel by God, Genesis 32. And then 32, 42, whatever it is, in Genesis. And then, of course, later comes Moses and whatnot, and the Ten Commandments and all those kind of things. So that was where you see, you know, because Moses wrote all this stuff down, not Abraham. And which is consistent with, is it Jeremiah? One of the other Old Testaments books where God says, look, I not only tell you the future, but I can tell you the past. The reason that Moses could write down things like Genesis 1 is because Jesus was there. And he could tell, you know, he tell it to Moses to write it down. It wasn't a guess. It wasn't a story passed from generation to generation. You know, before man was created, there was no one to tell the story but Jesus. But anyway, the idea that you know, because one of his points was, you know, we have Abraham, and we had Hagar and Sarah, and then of course Ishmael and Isaac, and so from Ishmael comes, you know, later on Muhammad, and they're making the claim that we are the chosen race, or Muhammad is the last prophet, because they acknowledge the prophet Jesus as a man created by God. I mean, it's in the Quran, Surah 4, I believe is where it says that, where Allah says be, and it is, in reference to the creation of Jesus, a virgin birth in the Quran. But there's a lot of issues, because when the Quran says, you know, take the obvious, that Jesus did not die on the cross, there's a conflict, which means at least one of those books is wrong. And I think that's the important thing. the Old Testament, the Tanakh, is consistent with the New Testament. The Quran is not. They conflict direct. So one of them has to be false. And obviously I will contend the Quran is false. But the idea that we just get, you know, accept each other because we're Abrahamic faiths, you're putting on the idea, you know, it's, yes, we all came from Adam. But that doesn't mean, or we all came from Noah. It doesn't mean that they have a particular role that brought us to where we are today and makes us significant. They're not the foundation of the faith. Jesus is. He always has been. He is the foundation of the Jewish faith that is seen in the Tanakh. And he's the foundation of the Old and New Testament. And he is the one and only creator. So when somebody will take the author here acknowledged that passage exists, but he did not do anything like I did, talking about the fact that they're the veracity of Scripture. It is just a, from his perspective, a human interpretation. These things were simply written down by ordinary people, that this is not God-breathed. And that's what's really important. It is a consistent document. If it's not a consistent document, then the author is a pathetic dweeb. It is a consistent document because it was written by our Creator, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That, I think, is vital. The Quran is false. But that doesn't mean you hate the Muslim. You love the Muslim. My line. Love the Muslim and contend with Islam. Because the Muslim is a human being created in the image of God. Islam, his faith, is false. Judaism, in the same way, it's the issue with, it's not the same in the case of Judaism. You know, because obviously there's a whole bunch of Messianic Jews, biological Jews who subscribe to Jesus as the Messiah or the Christ. But the idea of Judaism is simply the foundation and consistent with Christianity. The only way it's not is if you look at the way you see here in John 8, where they say, no, our father is Abraham, not God the Father. They were looking to Abraham as their foundation, not looking to the Creator. Jesus is the Creator. Jesus talked face to face with Abraham. So our relationship with the Jewish community is different than our relationship with the Muslim community, because we look at the same Old Testament, the Tanakh, and we value it the same. However, there are those, especially the Talmudic Jew, who turn to the Talmud instead of the Tanakh, and that's where they go astray. But anyway, the Jew, the Muslim, is not our enemy. The Jew looks at true book, the Tanakh, the Old Testament, and the Muslim looks at a false book, the Quran. Neither one of these people are our enemies. The Muslim is completely based on fallacy. The Jew is based on incompleteness, a distortion of what the Bible says, what the Tanakh says. And I think these things are really important. And now, to apply this one step further, Joseph Smith. Because he takes the story and continues on that Jesus came to the Americas, South America and North America, both. And interacted with a lot of people and built this. And again, those that follow Joseph Smith are not unified. The dominant player is the one in the Latter-day Saints in Utah, but there are other offshoots that are much smaller. So we're going to have to engage on this with joy. And that's the important thing. I'm not trying to triumph over him. I'm trying to engage a friend in dialogue, saying, no, when this guy says the three Abrahamic faiths and he kind of equates them, he has this ecumenical idea. No, I'm sorry. Islam is false. Judaism, as it's seen in modern context, is incomplete. And then, of course, we have to go one step further. Mormonism is a fallacy also. And the joy is, I can say that to him. And he can say, no, Joseph Smith spoke the truth. And that's what he rests on. And I'm missing the fullness of the story. And then we have wonderful conversations. Our foundations are different. But there's no reason to say, oh, well, I'm not going to talk to you. That would be a great model within a family, wouldn't it? Right, Mr. Cross? Right, my wife? Right, my kids? Right, what's his name? The harmonic atheist. I have whatever his name is. That Erica Lee did the interview with. You know, and I was very inviting to him, but he offered silence. He cut off dialogue. The institutional church does the same. My extended family, like my father-in-law, does the same. My wife does the same. Yet I can have a wonderful dialogue with a Latter-day Saint in joyful interaction, fully disagreeing on our foundation, and sharing the joy of a friendship. I want to do that with my own family. Because I believe that's the right model. The idea of isolating, you know, where does it say, you know, there's the thing that to be careful about. The idea of a separation. It's not a separation in the sense of, I will not interact with you. It's a separation of, I will not live the lifestyle you have. I'll not do the, you know, child sacrifices, things of that nature, and so forth. And I will not deny my Creator. I will not do your worship of pagan gods. That is the separation. But the idea of, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to separate with you because we disagree. I would suggest the bulk of the Christian community doesn't do that. You know, when you show up at a major store or whatnot, how many of these people are fellow followers of Christ, yet you interact with them? If you work at a large company, same thing. You drive down the street, why don't you separate from them? No, we're not called to be out of the world. Paul even writes about that. But at the same time, we're in the world, and what are we called to do? In season and out of season, proclaim Christ fully, unambiguously. Anyway, I was so delighted to get that this morning. I'd love to have a dialogue like this with Chris Bitterman, since I sent him 3 postcards. With Jim Cross, since he is my father-in-law. and with a woman who committed her life to me, to be at my side till one of us is dead. I'm keeping the promise. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.